You're listening to audio from the West End Community Church in McGregor, Manitoba.
All right. Well, good morning. It has been a few years since we've been here, and so I did want to share, like, I was thinking over this week as to how many different sorts of connections we have here. I think it's about 3 years since I was here just doing pulpit supply before we went to McCreary. We've been there just over 2.5 years. But then I was thinking, there's people here that we know from Gladstone. I don't know of anyone here that I grew up with. If there is, you'll have to catch me after the service because I just don't know. But people we've known through Gladstone, there's people here that I've known through Quartet. I was just thinking, there's at least one person who sat on my lap as a little girl and took my face in her hands, and all of a sudden her parents gave me the warning, she's about to lick your face. I won't say who that is. Some of you might know, be able to figure that out. But people here that we've known through the camp board, through YFC functions, through different things. And it's good to be able to come here this morning and to share with you. I want to take you into Genesis chapter 22 this morning. But just before I get there, I'm going there because at home, just before Easter, we had been going through the book of James. And of course, James is one of those people who relies on understanding what the faith of Abraham looks like to kind of help explain what our faith could look like. And I'm not sure where you're at in the book of Romans. I know Myron said you were in Romans, so he says 5. That means you've already gone through a passage that has exactly this phrase in it that is also found in James, saying that it was credited to him as righteousness. He believed God, and it was credited to him as righteousness. So that's found in James. The same kind of discussion comes up in Hebrews. The same kind of discussion comes up in the book of Romans, pointing back to Abraham as this source of an understanding of what faith looks like. So I do want to go there into Genesis. But before we get to chapter 22, I just want to back up, because we can look all the way back to chapter 11 and see his faith, although it doesn't really appear that it's his faith in chapter 11. Chapter 11, at verse 31, it says, Terah took Abraham his son, Abram. Always trouble with those names. Abram his son, and Lot the son of Haran, his grandson, and Sarai, his daughter-in-law, his son Abram's wife. And they went forth together from Ur the Chaldeans into the land of Canaan. But when they came to Haran, they settled there. The days of Terah were 205 years, and Terah died in the land of Haran. So this is a nice story about family moving out from Ur the Chaldeans. Only if you read into Acts chapter 7, you're going to find Stephen on his deathbed is giving kind of the history of Israel. And he says that it was Abram that was called from Ur the Chaldeans. And so he went out from there. He just followed on. God said, go to the place that I'm going to show you. And off he went. Now in chapter 11, it says Terah went with him. And I'm thinking, okay, so here's Abram goes, Dad, I've been told by God that I need to pack up and go. And his dad's like, sure, let's do it, right? Off we go, off to the land of Canaan, only they don't make it there. They get to Haran. And his dad looks around and is like, I like this. Let's settle right here. Only for God to come along and tap Abraham on the shoulder and say, keep moving. And so it ends up, if you look at the genealogies and stuff, there's about a 60-year period where Abraham's dad is living 120 miles north of him. They're separated by that distance as Abraham wanders around through the land of Canaan all the way down to Egypt, back to Canaan, and settles there. And so, yeah, in the beginning of chapter 12, we find the Lord speaking to Abraham and say, go from your country, from your kindred, and from your father's house to the land I will show you. And he does. He gets up and goes, leaves dad in Haran and carries on. Now, you look at chapter 13 and you see there a description of Abraham having kind of grown in wealth and things like that. He's got servants, and so much so that his nephew Lot has also had his flocks and herds grow, and they both have servants who are out there with these animals who are then at odds with one another because there's not enough room for everybody. There isn't enough grass to feed both of our flocks, and so they end up separating. And you see Abraham's faith there as he turns to his nephew and says, you know what, you choose the land that you want to go to, and I'll go the other direction. He's trusting God that wherever he ends up, he's going to be blessed by God in it. So you choose the land. Lot does not make the best choice and ends up living in the land of Sodom and Gomorrah, which causes him some problems in chapter 14, problems that are met, again, by Abraham's faith. Because as his nephew is taken captive by these kings of the north who come into the area of Sodom and Gomorrah and whisk everybody away and whisk away all their goods, Abraham decides, I'm going after these kings, I'm going to bring them back. And he goes and he brings back these captives and all of their goods. And then you see this story of him in chapter 14 giving 10% of everything that he brings back to a guy named Melchizedek, who is priest of the Most High God. And he's like, I don't need any of this for myself. He gives a tenth to God. He gives the rest back to the people of Sodom and Gomorrah and says, I'm good. God has me. I don't need you to make me rich. Chapter 15, you see God making a covenant with Abraham. And there's some time has gone by, a number of years that have gone by from when we first saw him in chapter 12 to now seeing him in chapter 15. And so it says in the beginning of chapter 15, after these things, the word of the Lord came to Abram in a vision. Fear not, I am your shield. Your reward will be very great. And Abraham responds to God like, what is it worth? Because I don't even have an heir, not a single son. All this is going to end up going to one from my household, one of my servants, a guy named Eliezer of Damascus. And God says, no, it won't be this man that inherits everything. It'll be a son from your own body. And then we get into this verse that is picked up by Paul and picked up by the author of Hebrews, picked up by James, because it says in verse 5 of chapter 15, the Lord brought him outside and said, look toward the heaven and number the stars if you're able to number them. And then he said to him, so shall your offspring be. And he believed the Lord and he counted it to him as righteousness. Here's Abraham's faith. Like, this is one of the greatest moments of recognizing his faith, right? God's speaking to him in response to the fact, I don't have a son. And God says, take a look up at the heavens. Start counting the stars. Tell me when you're done counting them. That's how many sons you're going to have. You're going to have descendants as numerous as the stars in the heavens. And Abraham looks up. I can't count those. But he believed God in what God said, that he would have these descendants. And that's all it took. He believed God. That was counted to him as righteousness. And yet we see this great man of faith in the next chapter kind of stumble in his faith. Because they're getting old. He and his wife are in their 70s and 80s. And his wife comes along and says, you know what, we can't do this. But why don't you go with Hagar, my servant, and you can have a child by her. And I'll raise this child as my own and we can have a family. And I don't know how much arm twisting it took, whatever. But Abraham went along with this idea. And so we have the birth of Ishmael come along, and it's not the best. It's not the plan God had for him. When God reiterates his covenant with Abraham, when he establishes, you know, some 13 years later, I'm still going to give you a child. There's this idea of circumcision then is brought in as a sign of this covenant that we're going to have. You want to talk about a sign of a man's faith, something that is, you know, without words saying, yes, I have faith in God. The man is in his 90s, and God says, I want you to be circumcised. He goes along with it. Like, okay, that's a pretty good sign of faith. What kind of faith did Abraham have that his 13-year-old son says, yeah, okay, Dad, let's get circumcised? What kind of faith does that man have that 318 men who are trained for war, who went out and brought Lot and all the captives back from Sodom and Gomorrah, having been taken away, they all stand up with Abraham and say, yes, sir, let's all get circumcised as a sign of this covenant that God is making with you. Not with us, but with you. These are men who trusted Abraham implicitly to go along with him on that. And say, yeah, this promise comes along. I'm going to bring about a son from your own body. But not just you, Abraham. Your wife, Sarah, will bear this child. And we know this story. Sarah's in the background by the door of the tent, and she's laughing. Now, she's not laughing derisively. She's not saying, no, God, that's ridiculous. But she is laughing in the incredulity of it. Like, God, I'm coming 90 here soon. Why wait till now to give me the joy of holding a child? Who here is 90 and wants to have a child? Anyone? No. And imagine then never having had a child, and all of a sudden you're 89, 90, and God says, Sarah is going to bear a child. And she's like, why wait this long? You see these blessings that God brings about. You see these examples of his faith where God tells him something that is just out of this world. And Abraham says, okay, yeah, good. Look up at the stars. Count them if you can. He looks and he says, no way. There's no way I can count them. And yet, God, I believe you're going to give me descendants as numerous as the stars. I'm 99, you say I'm going to have a son. That doesn't sound all that realistic, but God, you said it. And he goes along with it. Well, chapter 22 is taking place probably about 13 years later. That's at least 28 years from the first time God says, hey, I'm going to give you a child. And it's about 40 years since he's called him out of Ur of the Chaldeans. And so we read in Genesis chapter 22. After these things, God tested Abraham and said to him, Abraham, and he said, here I am. And he said, take your son, your only son Isaac, whom you love, go to the land of Moriah and offer him there as a burnt offering on one of the mountains of which I shall tell you. So Abraham rose early in the morning, saddled his donkey, and took two of his young men with him and his son Isaac. And he cut the wood for the burnt offering and arose and went to the place which God had told him. On the third day, Abraham lifted up his eyes and saw the place from afar. Then Abraham said to his young men, stay here with the donkey. I and the boy will go over there and worship and come again to you. And Abraham took the wood for the burnt offering and laid it on his son Isaac. And he took in his hand the fire and the knife, and so they went off, both of them together. And Isaac said to his father Abraham, my father. And he said, "Here I am." He said, "Behold the fire and the wood, but where is the lamb for the burnt offering?" Abraham said, "God will provide for himself the lamb for the burnt offering, my son." So they went, both of them together. When they came to the place of which God had told him, Abraham built the altar there and laid the wood in order and bound Isaac his son and laid him on the altar on top of the wood. Then Abraham reached out his hand and took the knife to slaughter his son. But the angel of the Lord called to him from heaven and said, "Abraham, Abraham." He said, "Here I am." He said, "Do not lay your hand on the boy or do anything to him, for now I know that you fear God, seeing you have not withheld your son, your only son, from me." This is such an incredible story. And from the beginning, from the outset, you and I have the benefit of hearing the words, "This is a test." God tells us this is a test for Abraham. Abraham is just going about his day. To be interrupted by God, not with, "Hey, here's a test for you, but I want you to take your son, your only son, your beloved son, take him off to a mountain somewhere and turn him into smoke." No father wants to hear that. And yet this is a story that just puts Abraham's faith on display. Because you read that in the beginning, and here's a man who for 40 years has been listening to God's voice, calling him to come out of Ur of the Chaldeans, calling him to a relationship with him that is different, telling him, "I'm going to make you numerous descendants, you know, I'm going to give you blessing, I'm going to curse those who curse you." There's all these things. Abraham has been going along with it, but now this same God is speaking to him. He knows the voice, and the voice says, "I want you to take your son and turn him into smoke." How? And yet, you look at verse 3. Abraham rose up early in the morning, and off he went. He didn't question. He didn't say, "Well, let's talk about this in a year's time and see if you still feel the same way, God." God said, "Take your son and go." Just like he said, "Get up and leave Ur of the Chaldeans and go to a place that I will show you. You're going to sacrifice your son at a place I will show you." And Abraham gets up in the morning and sets about doing it. Now, one of the things, as you read this in Hebrew, when we were studying Hebrew, it was like the way the sentence structure is in this whole passage, it's just kind of, why are we building? It talks about how he builds up the altar and lays the wood on it and lays his son on it on top of the wood that he's laid on top of the altar. And it just kind of spends all this time talking about this stuff. And it really serves to kind of slow us down in the story, because we've heard this is a test. We've heard he's supposed to go. And it could just jump to the end and say, okay, and he went to sacrifice his son. And instead it builds and it builds. And I think part of it is just having us slow down a bit to think about what was it like for Abraham. Because it takes 3 days to get there. 3 days of him thinking, when I reach the other end, I'm supposed to sacrifice my son. 3 days of that. And we look at the story and we know the story, so that's good. But if you're in the story, and you're walking through this story, how does it play out? I've always wondered, did Abraham tell Sarah what was going on? And I think maybe not. But on the other hand, I'm reading it again this week, and I'm wondering to myself, why are these two servants along? Right? Because the servants don't end up going all the way there. They get to stay behind with the donkey. And yet the donkey could have easily went anywhere that Abraham and Isaac went. So it's not really about the donkey. Why are these two men there? And I'm thinking, if this guy who's 130 114 years old, tells his wife, who's just over 100, that he's going to go on a three-day hike with his son and have an offering out there, kind of like a bar mitzvah for the boy, bringing him into the covenant as a man of the covenant. I can see this 100-year-old lady saying, "You're going nowhere. You're going to stay right here." And he says, "No, God called me to do this." "Well, then at least take some of the servants with you, so that if you get stuck out there somewhere in a valley, you slipped off the edge or something, you bump your head, one of them can stay with you and one can come back, or they can carry you, whatever. You're not going alone." It doesn't say that, but I've just asked myself the question, why are these two men there? Because they really don't fit into the story otherwise. Except that there's an opportunity in the story when we see these two men who are along to hear Abraham's faith. And we don't quite get it in the English. The Hebrew adds just a little bit to it. But when he gets to the place, he can see God says, "That's the mountain on which I want you to offer your son." He arrives there on the third day and he turns to these two young men with him and he says, "You stay here with the donkey." Then he says, "I and the boy are going to go over there and worship." And in the Hebrew, it makes a specific point of saying, "And we will return to you." We don't get that in English. We just say, "We're going to go and come back." And the Hebrew could have easily said that in the same way, "We'll go and come back." But no, it makes the point of, "We're going to go over there and we are going to return." And it's a very important distinction. When we look at the book of Hebrews talking about this, it talks about how Abraham was wrestling with this. Like, how can this be? God, you've promised all of this stuff that is going to happen is going to come about through this son. If I turn him into smoke, how is that going to come about? And it says Abraham came to the understanding that even if God has to raise him from the dead, it can happen. And I think that's exactly what's going on right here as he's standing there. He's making that statement, God can do whatever God is going to do. He's promised through this son all these blessings. So even if we go over there and I turn him into smoke, God is going to bring him back so that we return to you. An incredible statement of faith. And yet God is expecting him to carry on. Keep moving. Don't stop there with just having told these guys you have faith, right? And I want you to notice something that comes up a couple of times in here, right? He transfers wood over to his son, takes the fire and the knife, and it says that the two of them went off together. And it mentions that again later. And it's the idea of, here's the son who's saying, I get to go by myself to worship with Dad. The two of us are going to go off and do this. And he's all on board, right? Only the next thing is, there he is. We're off on the road. And wait a second. Dad, we're missing something. And what's that, son? We've got the fire, we've got the knife. Where's the lamb for the sacrifice? Young man finally catches on, there's something missing. He's had 3 days to think about this and not really notice it, but now that it's just him and Dad, we're off together to do this, where's the lamb? Maybe they actually had a lamb along and it got left behind for the two servants to roast up for supper. I don't know. But for some reason, it only dawns on him now on the third day that there's something missing. And there's another statement of faith that comes about from Abraham at this point. Because when he's asked, where's the lamb for the sacrifice? Abraham says this, God will provide for himself the lamb for the burnt offering, my son. And in English, we add the little word for. In the Hebrew, it doesn't have that. It could, but it doesn't have that. Instead, what it says here is, God will provide himself the lamb for the sacrifice. Two nouns put together, essentially saying, This noun is that noun. He will provide himself the lamb. And it doesn't happen in this story. It's this great word of faith for the moment of what's going to happen here. But it's also this prophetic word about the cross. Jesus, the one that John the Baptist says, "Behold the Lamb of God who takes away the sin of the world." Jesus, who is Emmanuel, God with us, he provides himself as the lamb that gets sacrificed on our behalf that we just celebrated at the Easter season. And yet here's Abraham saying this. It's like a little slip of the tongue or something, and yet he says God will provide himself the lamb for the sacrifice. So it says then, when they came to the place that God had told him, Abraham built the altar, laid out the wood in order, and bound his son Isaac. And I'm thinking, Isaac, you know, just standing around with dad, hey, what should we do? Well, we're going to build this altar. Okay. And he's thinking, we're building an altar for a lamb. So we build an altar, and dad's extending that altar. Dad, lamb for the sacrifice, altar for the sacrifice. What's going on? And dad lays out all the wood, and lamb for the sacrifice, wood for the sacrifice. Why? Dad, what is going on? And yet that statement, the two of them went together, comes up again. And it's this idea that he is right there with dad. Let's do this. And so when dad binds him, we don't hear of a struggle. Just like we don't hear of Jesus in a struggle. Instead, like a lamb, he was led to slaughter. And here the son says, okay, dad, I guess. Does dad explain it all? Dad doesn't understand at all how this is going to happen. But he knows, he's been told, sacrifice your son. And in the New Testament, it says he was in the very act of putting his son to death. He's drawn the knife. It is like, this is the last moment when God says, Abraham, Abraham, and interrupts him. Beautiful story. Lots of opportunities for Abraham to express his faith in words. We see his faith by his actions and what he does and how he does it. He just gets up and goes in the morning. And yet, what does it really take to get right to that moment where you're ready to cut your son's throat because you trust God enough that he is able to even bring him back from the dead, if that's what's necessary? But God interrupts him, like, who wants to live with the knowledge that you've slain your own son? God stops him short of that. Now, the next verse tells us that he turned and saw a ram caught in the thickets. Not a lamb, which is what he had prophesied, but a ram caught in the thickets by its horns. And he offers that as a sacrifice in place of his son. Beautiful. Beautiful story. But I love what it goes on to say about God's next conversation with Abraham. Verse 14, Abraham called the name of that place, "The Lord will provide." As it is said, "To this day, on the mountain of the Lord, it shall be provided." Jehovah Jireh. You know, this sounds so much like what he said beforehand, and yet beforehand he said God will provide. That is, Elohim will provide. Although it did say there, "The Elohim will provide." Now he's clarified, who is the Elohim? Who is the God of the universe? It is Yahweh. Yahweh has provided. And so the place received that name, and it says it has been that name to this day. In verse 15, the angel of the Lord calls to Abraham a second time from heaven and says, "By myself I have sworn, declares the Lord, because you have done this and not withheld your son, your only son, I will surely bless you, and I will surely multiply your offspring as the stars of the heaven and the sand that is on the seashore, and your offspring shall possess the gates of their enemies, and in your offspring all nations of the earth shall be blessed, because you have obeyed my voice. He reiterates some statements that God has made in the past about the blessing that is going to come upon him. But there's something in the Hebrew that gets picked up by New Testament writers as well, in that as he says this, there's a hard stop in this line that says this is the complete statement that you need to focus on. And that is, the angel says to him, "By myself I have sworn, declares the Lord, because you have done this and not withheld your son, your only son," period. That idea is sufficient to stand on its own. In other words, this 40 years that I've been blessing you, this 40 years that I've been directing you, this 40 years that I have said, this is what it's all about. God says, I've been doing all of this having seen this moment happen. Because God is outside of time. He's not bound by waiting for something to happen. He's seen it happen. And so he can proclaim 40 years in advance to Abraham, this is what it's going to be like. You're going to be blessed because of your faith. And it does come because he believes, right? It is because of what's going on in his heart. And yet we get to see all these beautiful examples of his faith being on display by the things that he does. God says, go to this place I'm going to show you. Okay, off we go. Leave Ur of the Chaldeans. The reminder, hey, you're supposed to leave your father's household. Okay, leaving Haran. I want you to take your son and offer him as a sacrifice. And he just gets up in the morning and goes to do it. But there's these words of faith and there's these examples and exhibitions of his faith that all fit together. Not so that he can be justified by having been ready to cut his son's throat. But that definitely demonstrates that the faith that he spoke of is absolutely true. When he said, we're going to go over there and we're going to return to you, he meant that. It was absolutely settled in his mind, we're going to do this because this is what God has called me to do. And he had a faith that trusted God to do that. You know, we can get at times to look at one version of things in the New Testament versus another version of things in the New Testament and think, well, how do these fit together? So many people will look at something like Romans talking about faith and works. And then they'll read James and see faith and works. And they almost get the impression that one is saying, hey, you need to have works. And the other is saying, no, you don't. It's nothing but faith. And it's not. And if we're reading it that way, we need to go back and read it again. Take those pieces and see how they fit together. Because Paul is the same guy that turns to his friend Timothy and says, all scripture is God-breathed. It's useful for teaching, preaching, rebuking, and training in righteousness. All of it. It's not like pick this verse and say, yes, that's what I'm going to hang myself on right there. That's what I'm going to hang all of my beliefs on. No, he says, take this in light of that and in light of that. Everything from Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, all the way through Malachi, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, all the way to Revelation. It all has to fit together in informing what we believe. How do we understand faith? And so we need to be able to fit these things together and make sense of everything that is in Scripture. It all impacts how we look at it. And so, yeah, you've got these guys in the New Testament who are pointing back to Abraham as this rock-solid vision of what faith looks like. And we enjoy reading the story. We get to see his faith in action. We get to see his faith in words. And we're encouraged to do the same. And even Paul does that, right? In Ephesians chapter 2, he says that it is by grace that you have been saved through faith. And a lot of us would like to just, there you go, that's it, faith. And it is, right? And that's what he's saying. It is by grace that you've been saved through faith. And this is not of yourselves. It's not works that you've done that no one can boast. Abraham couldn't boast about being willing to offer his son as a sacrifice. It had nothing to do with him being more faithful, except that he was putting his faith in God, right? It's not his actions. But Ephesians goes on, it's not by grace, or it is by grace that you've been saved through faith. This not of yourselves, it is a gift of God. Not by works that no one may boast. And then it says, but there are works that God has created in advance for us to walk in. And that's what Abraham was doing here. And that's why the wording of that passage is important, as Abraham is told by God, your faith right here, this moment, I've been blessing you all along because of what I've seen. It's the totality of his faith. His belief backed up by his actions, not proving anything to God who knows the end from the beginning, but being able to prove his faith to Abraham. Like, Abraham, do you really believe? If he just said, yeah, I believe, and God left it at that, okay, whatever. But 40 years of building this up, God says to Abraham, do you really believe enough to take the knife out of its sheath with your son laying here, lay your hand on his forehead, and draw the knife across his throat? He was in the very act when God said, yes, Abraham, do you see what your faith is like? You trust me that even that I would even be able to bring him back from the dead because you believe the promises that have been made. That's incredible faith. And it is something that exists for us like 4,000 years later. We can look back and continue to read about what this man's faith was like. Without faith, it is impossible to please God. And the idea is that we need to trust that God exists, that he's bigger than us, right? And that he rewards those who honestly, joyfully seek him and his will. And that's what we do. That's how we live a life that is of faith like Abraham. We're going to have those occasions when, just like Abraham, we are looking at our situation and saying, God, how can this even be? How can you ask this of me? We've been there. And yet, when we trust in God and we take a step forward, we see him blessing us. And sometimes those blessings are not immediate. It takes a while for them to come about. But we trust that God's plan is good. And we let him work through everything that we do as we do it by faith. Continue to trust in him. Through the hard times, through the good times, through the blessing, through the curses that seem to come along in life. Take it all in stride and continue to look to God. He is the one who's providing the grace to do it all. Let's pray. Father, I thank you for these words of encouragement and blessing as we read of the story of Abraham's life. It wasn't all smooth. He wasn't always in the right. And yet overall, he is held up as this example of faith because when it came right down to it, he was trusting you. Looking at the vast sky and a simple word of promise, your descendants will be as numerous as the sky, he had faith. And yet also in the hardest of times, being asked to take his own son's life, he was willing because you were the one who called him to it. And though he couldn't understand, he was trusting in you. Father, help us in our days as we strive to live lives of faith. Let us walk in a manner worthy of our calling. You're the one who is offered the ultimate sacrifice that restores us. You were the lamb for the sacrifice. And then you rose again. That is the ultimate example of the hope that we have. So go with us through our days. Help us to remember how much you love us and that this calling that you've given us is good. Allow us to operate in faith in the good times and in the hard times. We ask it in Jesus' name. Amen.